Hello, my name is Chip Ling, and you are listening to Totally EM. We have been talking with two PA faculty about how to integrate ultrasound into a PA program. But this is not just for PA faculty. This is not just for those who are teaching currently. This is for anyone who may be able to use these skills. So I highly encourage, if you haven't listened to the others, to go back and listen to them. But if you already have, and this is waiting on, you've been waiting the weeks to get to it, I'm sorry we had to space it out. But if you're binging through it, lucky for you, you just get to keep going. But I want to thank real quick both the Society of Point of Care Ultrasound and Practical Pocus for making this possible, because this is part of a SPOCUS series to try and help educators be able to start using ultrasound in their programs. So now let's talk about the logistics to integrating ultrasound. So what I'd be curious now about is the actual like logistics side of this. So Laura, I think you mentioned on your side that you had an issue about machines. So I'd be curious, both of you, because it's not like machines are cheap. They are getting less expensive with time, but they are not a small investment. So Laura, when you were starting this and had no machines, how did you actually accomplish this?
So once again, through SPOCUS, we were really fortunate to get some contacts through there. We started off by using Philips probes. We rent the Philips probes at a monthly rate. You can also purchase them outright, but we just rent them for a period of time. So that's actually really helpful. So if you do not have the money to purchase them, then you can just rent them for a small portion of the year, and it's going to save you a substantial amount of money. These probes are compatible with an app called the Lumify app. The app itself is free. It just has to be on a compatible device. And that tends to be the Samsung devices right now. So we've purchased two Samsung Galaxy tablets. So we're able to use those for other things in the curriculum, but they serve primarily as our ultrasound machines, so to speak. We have pretty decent screen size on those. So we have those two tablets, but realistically, if a student walks in with a Samsung phone, we can hook that up, that probe up to their phone and utilize that as well. This year, we're actually borrowing the ultrasound probes from another local program. So if you have a good relationship with another program and the one that understands that it's not really that we need to compete against each other, it's that ultrasound is so important at this point that we need to be teaching all of our students how to do this in order to save lives and improve patient outcomes. If you can find a program like that that is willing to share those resources, that's going to cut down on your costs as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of the stuff that Laura said here. And I say this once and I'll say it again and again. I am very, very lucky to be part of a relatively small, newish PA program that's situated within a very well-established and well-appointed academic medical center and medical school. And so we have a lot of resources at our fingertips. And so machines weren't really that big of a problem for us. When I first started, I mean, the PA program doesn't own any ultrasound machines, but our School of Medicine owns several, like I call it the stable of ultrasound machines. They've got like six of them. And they're for the medical students. But when I first came, I actually started off bartering my time and expertise to teach in return for time with the ultrasound machines. And now that's kind of turned into a really nice, like, symbiotic relationship. And at this point, I'm not really bartering my time at all. I just get to have free reign of the ultrasound machines whenever we want them for the PA students. And we've got, there's some GE models are what we have. And we also have a couple of Sonosites within our stable of machines, as I like to say. I've also got a old school, like handheld GE machine too. I don't even know what it's like 10 years old or something like that. And I have that. We don't use it as much, but it is nice for its portability. So I think like the point with that is that you can be super creative. And so whether you are doing some resource sharing with another PA program or another program within your own institution, there are some easy ways that you can create relationships, break down silos while also having the access to these machines that you absolutely need to have. And they can be quite expensive. So this is certainly one way to get around that. But I mean, the price is dropping on other machines. Of course, you've got like the handheld ones that are iOS compatible or the ones that are Android compatible. And I think that this is super exciting, not only for clinical care, but especially for the education side of things too.
It sounds like you're both using quote-unquote pocket ultrasound devices. Is that correct? Or are you guys using any more of the larger full-size like laptop type machines or anything along those
lines? Yeah, so the ones that we're usually using over at UNC, the GEs, those are mostly the larger kind of like laptop ones on the stand, on the rolly stands. We do have that one handheld and another handheld that will be coming soon, but mostly the larger ones.
Okay. And then, of course, the Lumifys are one example of the pocket ultrasound types. And there are others out there, and they all kind of run different price ranges. I think people are really starting to go towards Philips in some ways when they are part of a program because of the fact that you can basically loan out or borrow for a period of time. But there are other machines that are also available, and it's definitely worth shopping around. Just to name off a couple, there's the new Butterfly system, if you can get a hold of one. I mean, that's the big thing, is that there's a big wait right now. But they're the least expensive. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's hands are up as they're waiting desperately.
That's the one that's coming very soon. So yeah, we're excited about that.
So, and that one's less than $2,000. At least they say that. And then you, of course, add in all the other fun stuff with it. But you've got that. And then you have the GEV scan as well. But there's all sorts of options. You're not limited to any particular type. And then if your program can afford or share with a department, like you guys were talking about, some of the other machines, they can be extremely beneficial because you'll get a little more quality as far as your images go. But in some ways, this is just a personal experience of mine. I started out learning first on a V-scan, which, I mean, they're little handheld devices. And yeah, that was a challenge to learn from because you didn't have the greatest images a lot of times. But man, when you went to, next thing you know, a Sonosite M-Turbo, and you could see good. And now I'm using a Sonosite Export at one place, which is like the Cadillac in some ways as far as ultrasound. So like now I can see things great. But I feel like if I learned the other way around, I would have a harder time interpreting images. There's got to be some middle ground in between. But really, when you're talking about a new program and adding in costs that you haven't had to deal with before, you know, don't be afraid to go small. That going small is not necessarily a bad thing when you consider all the other costs behind it. But you may have to share or figure out a way to work with other programs to help split up the cost so it's more reasonable for everyone involved.
And I think the other thing too is there are potentially funding opportunities, whether at your institution or things that are on the state or national level. Again, like I said before, this is a novel technology, especially when it comes to medical education. And so people may want to fund you if you place an application in for a grant or something like that. So I know that we have got a Center for Faculty Excellence at our institution, and I've gotten some funds from them in order to support our ultrasound program at UNC. So that's another opportunity that educators can look at as well.
Something we kind of mentioned briefly, but I wanted to hit back on, because it's another logistics type issue, and since we're talking about the logistical things at this point. Models. Are you having your own students act as models? Are there times that you're getting outside people to act as models? Can we elaborate on that a little bit more?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when we are doing learning sessions or practice sessions, anything that's very formative in nature, our students are scanning on one another. They're using each other as models or faculty members as models, etc. However, if we're ever doing an assessment, a formal assessment session, so this is going to be like OSCEs, practicals, those type of things, we do bring in a standardized patient. So we've got an excellent standardized patient program at our School of Medicine that we use standardized patients frequently for non-ultrasound related encounters. And so we essentially hire a standardized patient for something that's going to be associated with a formal assessment. And that's kind of the way that we do it. One thing that I would like to bring up, and this definitely fits within the logistics, especially if you are going to scan your students some way, shape, or form, making sure that you have a policy on incidental findings within your program. program, because inevitably you are going to find something abnormal or normal variation or pregnancy or something like that. You'll probably find that on one of your students at some point in time. And so it's really nice to have a policy that has a very clear cut route of action should or when you find a finding that is incidental. And so that's something that we did recently, that we wrote recently in terms of a policy at our institution. And it doesn't just cover point of care ultrasound. We expanded it to cover any sort of physical examination finding. So like if you're like auscultating somebody's heart and you hear a murmur, that falls underneath that incidental finding policy. So that's something that I would encourage anybody that's doing any scanning at their institution to have in place.
That sounds great. What about you, Laura? How have you been tackling this issue?
So we primarily use standardized inpatients for our encounters. Like I said before, we're limited to one course that we teach ultrasound in right now, so that makes it a little bit easier. I really like utilizing the standardized patients just because I feel like, first of all, the students take it a little bit more seriously. They're going to be more likely to pursue and actually do the scan properly. They're also doing a better job of explaining what they're trying to find. So they get that practice with actually talking to a patient and telling them, oh, this is what I see on the screen. This is what this particular finding means. The other really nice thing, too, is I can purposely recruit for individuals that I happen to know have abnormalities. And it does not have to be some random person you find on the street. Like, for instance, next month, my father's coming in because I know he has complete occlusion of his carotid artery. So I'm going to be able to show my students, here's what an abnormal carotid looks like. Here's, you know, look at each other and hopefully you're going to find normal carotids. We do periodically have the students scan each other. That's mostly for our ultrasound team. We had one compete in the Yes, I Scan competition last year at AAPA, and we're having another one compete in 2019's competition as well. So those students tend to practice on each other just because they are practicing outside of normal class times. But we also have had students who they happen to know they have an abnormality, or, you know, say you have a student who has an IUD in place, we'll let them, if they're willing to let each other scan and see those findings, then we do encourage that. But I absolutely agree with Janelle. You do have to have some sort of policy for both your students and your standardized patients so that everybody knows if something incidental is found, that's going to have to be worked up by a true expert, and we're not going to be formally diagnosing anything.
Mm-hmm. And I would love if you guys could share those with us so we can add that to the show notes. There are other places you can find it too. For example, ASEP has a policy and recommendations on how to do that. I think SPOCUS has also included stuff, but I think it's basically based on everyone else's as well. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is you just need to have something out there that ensures follow-up and ensures for further evaluation if warranted. For those who are listening, who are wondering what kind of incidental findings, I think we've already mentioned some of them. I was actually just reading a paper the other day about point of care ultrasound and incidental findings. The most common is actually renal cyst. So renal cyst tends to be the most common because the kidneys get scanned a lot, especially when you're teaching EFAS and stuff, and that's usually where it pops up. So renal, probably the most common you're going to see, and usually some of the most benign, but you're going to see plenty of other things as well, including the, hopefully it won't happen to you, but occasional pregnancy in one of your students. Otherwise, I think we've talked about the main stuff there. The other thing I wanted to talk about was when you do this integration, I think something that's really neat and can be tied in easily with the OSCE is having almost something that relies on you having the ultrasound. For example, you're talking about your father with the carotid and just something where now when you examine that, it could potentially change your management. But I mean, there are some ways of how to integrate it where you can talk about, okay, this is what you would have done classically. Would this have worked? Actually, just like you were talking about, Janelle, when you have the, okay, when you auscultate for this, or when you're trying to find the edges of the liver, are you actually accurate? Mm-hmm. You know, those little things there all of a sudden you realize just how beneficial ultrasound is. And this can sometimes be buy-in for the faculty. I've noticed this at places where the faculty are like, I guess I'll help and, you know, I'll maybe learn a thing or two in between. And all of a sudden, by the time they're done, they're wanting to do the scans because now they're interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think we're doing a great job as far as what we're covering, but I'd be curious if there's anything else that either one of you would like to add.
So I guess the thing that I kind of want to just leave as an ending thought or a parting thought, and it's something that we've probably sound like a broken record, really, is that you don't have to have something like big and fancy or a standalone course or anything like that at all, especially if you're looking at physician assistant education, because there just is not enough time to do that. And so what I would recommend to people is just like find a way that you can sneak point of care ultrasound into one of your other classes, whether that is anatomy or physiology or H&P or your procedures course, and just start there. Like put it in for a couple of sessions, 1 year, see how the students react to it, see how the other faculty members react to it, see, you know, did the students do better on, like, say, their clinical rotations when they were, you know, given the opportunity to scan a real patient? And was there, you know, some sort of effect that was garnered from that? But I think that really what you need to do is just realize you don't have to have some big, huge, like, master plan in order to do ultrasound. Like, you can sneak it in to almost any class and truly have a benefit for your students.
Like we were saying, if the only place you can really get this is, you know, a 1 day workshop or something like that, if that's the only way you can get it into your curriculum, I think that's great. If going outside your program is the only way you can get somebody to teach it, I think that's great too. But if at all possible, I really would encourage faculty members to learn themselves for a few reasons. I think first of all, you're going, like Janelle is doing, you're going to find different places to put it in the curriculum. I mean, my long-term goal is to have that year-round integration, just kind of working past, you know, costs, getting our own machines. But I think as it becomes more available, we're going to be able to do that easily. The other thing, too, is just students will also be able to see, hey, if my old professor is able to do this, I guess I'm going to be able to learn it and be able to lap them. So I think it gives them that sort of encouragement too. And really, the students who I've had who have been able to learn ultrasound have just been so happy with whatever has been given to them, whether it was my students the first time I taught it who received relatively little training versus what I'm teaching now. They're still so appreciative of it. And just the students who even had the smaller amount of training have been able to really transition to that into some great outcomes when they're on clinical rotations and then also when they're actually applying for jobs and in clinical practice.
Yeah, so that's great. I think on that wonderful note, we should end it there. Thank you so much, Janelle and Laura, for coming on to speak with us and share your experiences. And hopefully for the people who are listening, this will give them some ideas. And obviously, we would all love to help. And you can definitely reach out to us to get some more information, especially SPOCUS, which loves to do a lot of stuff with PA programs or any other program in general. But otherwise, again, thank you so much both for your help.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there for our interview with those two faculty members. I am very appreciative for them coming on. And I really believe that this is a great podcast for anyone who is interested in figuring out how you can integrate ultrasound. So if you know someone who is needing some help with that or has an ultrasound program in place, maybe not fully developed, this would again be a great way to refer the information to them. And I know both SPOCUS and Practical POCUS would love to help with this. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.